Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got it.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, one of the 2010 November 9 for the main event of the World Series of Poker, John Reisner, who will join us in just a few minutes. And then later on, our conversation with Norman Chad, who with Lon McCarron will begin their coverage on ESPN of the 2010 World Series of Poker tonight with the $50,000 Players Championship. They'll be on every Tuesday night from now until, well, the November 9 rolls around. I am Paul Harrah's, sitting alongside, for the first time in a long time here at Harrah's, Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. Welcome back home.
Yeah, I do recognize the room, yes.
I think the last time, well, we've seen each other in Vegas during the World Series. I think the last time you and I sat next to each other here was before Memorial Day.
It probably was. And I have bad news for you again.
What?
I'm on the run again starting tomorrow. I catch a flight out here tomorrow morning again.
Wow. Well, I'm actually leaving town right after the show today because I'm going down to Tunica, where they are playing the World Poker Open this week, building up to a big 5K tournament there this weekend. I'm going to play in a couple of the preliminary events over the next couple of days and maybe satellite into the big one.
Sweet.
And then we'll see how that goes. Where are you off to again? By the way, have you played poker since we did the show on the phone last week? You were in Los Angeles at the time. Have you played a hand of poker since then?
Not a hand of live poker. Played on the computer and everything, but I've not played a single hand of live poker and all of this going. And it just changed today a couple of times again. It looks like now I'm flying from here to Vegas, going from Vegas to L.A., from L.A. back to Vegas, from Vegas to Bristol, Connecticut. I'm going to be doing the Inside Deal next Monday for ESPN and about four other interviews they have lined up for me.
Uh-huh.
From there back to Vegas, and then from Vegas back to St. Louis.
Wow.
All of that between now and next Thursday.
Holy cow. Yeah, you know what? This is one of the few times that you are an infrequent traveler. You're actually in the same city for 24 hours before you head back out to go where you are. So you just came home basically to do laundry, right?
That must be it, yeah. Make sure that the house is still standing, you know, the usual stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you know, after the long summer that is the World Series of Poker, 8 weeks or something like that, you were out there. You did take a little bit of a break and went to California and had a little vacation, right?
It was a sort of a working vacation. But, yes, I actually put my feet in the water.
Yeah.
You would be proud of me. It is wet. I found that out.
Well, welcome back to town. We do have a lot of stuff to get to on today's show, including news about the Barney Frank Internet Gambling Bill and lots of other poker news. But let's get right to our first guest.
Absolutely.
This is the first of the November Niners to make an appearance here on the Final Table. He's a 24-year-old pro from Florida by the name of John Reisner, who, when play was suspended a couple of weeks ago, was fourth in chips. Fourth in chips means he's got somewhere around 19 million in chips and puts him kind of in the middle of the pack. We've talked about Jonathan Duhamel, who is the guy who is the big stack there with 66 million, and John Dolan, who's the second stack with 46. And then you've got the guys in the middle, like Joseph Chung and John Reisner and Matthew Darvis and Filippo Candio and even the grinder Michael Mizrachi, who are kind of there in the teens or low 20s.
And don't just say even the grinder. He's been there before. He's been in a few of these, and I think John's had a few hours playing with him probably.
Yeah,
so.
John Reisner, welcome to the Final Table.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
It's a pleasure having you on here. Have you gotten,
thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Have you gotten any rest? We're just talking about Dennis's summertime schedule. I know you were very busy. You actually cashed in three other events beyond the main event. Were you in Vegas all summer long?
I was there from the very first event. I didn't play the 50K event, but the first event after that I played, and I played all the way through.
How many events
about,
did you play?
25 events, because, you know, they overlap when you make day twos and stuff like that.
Yeah. But, again, that's a heck of a schedule. You're playing 25 events out there. And I ended up, any time I had in between them, I was playing satellites or cash games or even one of the other casinos out there. Did you get anywhere outside of the Rio Poker Room?
Actually, I didn't play any of the Venetian events or anything like that. I was really focused on winning bracelet this year.
Okay.
So I was playing all the World Series events. I didn't even really play many cash games or satellites either, for that fact. I was just trying to stay focused and getting deep in as many events as possible. Okay. If I busted out and there was one that was just starting, or if I just late registration, I would just jump right into that one, so to speak.
Were there any times that you were playing two tournaments at the same time and having to run back and forth?
No, there wasn't.
Good.
I'm not Phil Ivey. I don't play six tournaments at once.
Yes, I agree with you 100%.
But at times, though, it would be in the back of my mind, though. You know, if I'm playing the noon event, I know I have the 5 o'clock event, and you can register till 7 o'clock. You know, of course, around 6 o'clock, I would be thinking, you know, maybe I can make a move here to get some chips or get into the next event. I'm not just pulling 5,000 and 10K events away, but, you know, of course, that's in the back of my mind.
Well, yeah, it is. You're trying to think of what's
your best
strategy.
I think it's in the back of everyone's mind.
Well, sure it is. Absolutely.
And, of course, we could always point those people out at the table that it is in their minds, and we know who it isn't as well.
Are you telling me that there's a second tournament registration bubble in some main tournaments that you're playing, that you can actually see guys who are playing a strategy like that?
That's what we're saying. It's pretty sick, isn't it?
It is. It's awesome. And it's absolutely the truth.
Yeah.
Speaking of bubbles, I want to ask you this, because you are one of the November 9, and everybody knows who's ever played a tournament what the money bubble is. That's when you're getting to the point where whoever can last is going to get paid something, even if it's a min cash, which at the World Series this year was 19,000 and change. So that we all know about that bubble, and there are also mini bubbles in a tournament after that, where you're going to be moving up a pay grade, which in the World Series of Poker can be $10,000, $20,000, $50,000. You guys took 5 or maybe 6 hours to go from 10 to 9.
I'm shaking my head right now as you keep saying this, but go ahead.
Tell me what it's like to play that bubble and what your strategy was like at that point. Were you playing bubble poker?
Okay, well, I can tell you one thing. I did the worst during that time. Unfortunately, because when we were 10-handed, I had like 37 million, and I handed with 19 million. So, John Dolan, he did the best during that time, and it was basically because of me. But he got ran over the deck, and he admitted to me 100% that he did. Several times, you know, he 3-bet or 4-bet me pre-flop. He told me he had aces both times. You know, another time, you know, I bet the flop turn river, and then he blasts me with a raise on the river, and he told me he had it. I mean, I think the bubble from 10 to 9 meant more to him than me, so I don't expect him making moves there like that. But, and I mean, we became friendly since then. He's told me that he had it during those hands, so.
Yeah, and it's going to come out on the TV anyhow.
I did do the worst during that. I mean, that could have been a huge difference. If I won those hands off him, I would have the $50 million. You know, I would want from 37 to 55. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Well, so, but don't sell yourself short. You also didn't bust with those hands. You still have 19 million in change
correct.
There.
That's also correct. I folded jacks to him one time pre-flop.
Yep.
Another time, a weird situation is where one of the tighter guys at the table, he raised, and I would normally re-raise him with tens, with pocket tens pre-flop to put the pressure on him. And he told me afterwards, once the guy got knocked out 10th, he told me that he had queens and he was never going to fold to me. The flop came 9 high, and I check folded to him. Which,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, if it was like 7 or 8 high, I think I might have would have went with it. But I figured if the only hand that I can be beating is 9s, and the flop came 9 high. So
okay.
He said, I check folded to him. I thought about it forever. It's probably the longest I thought in the whole 8 days of the tournament, whether it was pre-flop, flop, turn, or river, longest I thought.
You see, that actually brings up an interesting thing. Many times, going deep in the tournament means the ability to not play some hands,
mm-hmm.
the ability to fold even a monster hand that you have. And most people don't realize that. They play ABC poker, you know. I have kings, therefore I can't lay them down. The heck you can't.
Or I have tens or jacks on a nine high board. I'm probably still the best hand here.
Yep.
And to have the discipline to lay those down and say to yourself, you know what, I'm going to wait until I'm sure I'm in a better slot. That's the kind of poker you were playing, John.
Sounds excellent.
Yeah, a lot of that was going through my mind. That was the main thing that was going through my mind. I hope I don't have a situation where I get kings and I'm to a big test pre-flop, because that's just sickening to me. I don't know what I would have done. It matters, I guess, how many chips it would have had or whoever it was. But that was one thing I was hoping that didn't happen. And, I mean, I know we're talking about the final table bubble, but actually the actual money bubble of the 700 people that were left or whatever, I was actually very short during then. I had, like, maybe, like, 12 or 15 big blinds.
Whew.
And I was, yeah, and I mean, we went to dinner break and then came back and finished the bubble, the money bubble. And we were talking about on our break, me and my buddies, if we were going to fold kings pre-flop. And all of us said no. just because, I mean, obviously we want to go deep in the tournament and everything, but we're not trying to make the money, so to speak.
Yeah,
we're not trying to just make the money. Like, I'm not saying a ton of other people are, but, you know, there's that handful of people that are.
Yes.
Just want to make the money. We all said no, though.
If you're a pro and you're the level that you're playing at, there are people out there that just want to make it and they're going to creep into it and they may be not even looking at their cards. I actually have seen that in tournaments. People don't even look at their cards. They fold it because they're afraid to play it.
I know a guy from St. Louis who did cash, who, when it got down to maybe four or five away, he did not look at his cards. He mucked them every time. He said, the worst thing that could happen to me there was to be able to see aces, and I would have to throw them away because I wanted to cash the main event of the World Series of Poker, and I didn't want to get into a situation where I've got aces and I get cracked and I go home three away from the money.
I think that's horrible. Anyone who would do that, not looking at the cards, it's like if you're playing basketball and, I don't know, If somebody told you had to wear a blindfold or you didn't have to wear one, I mean, why would you wear one? It's just a disadvantage to you.
It is, absolutely. I agree with you
100%. It's a huge disadvantage not to look at your cards. People who do that, or even like in other games, like mixed games, where it's their turn on 7th Street and they check blind. I mean, I think anything you do blind is a disadvantage. If you can look and it's going to be an advantage to you, then why not do it?
It would be a very rare time that I wouldn't agree with you. There are times, maybe, with a certain situation or the way a person's, the tell you may have on them.
Well, I could see
correct.
That. You're correct.
Very rare spot like that, I understand. But I played most of the events, mixed games, no limit, everything, and I didn't do it one time the whole series.
I could see if you're in a mega where winning doesn't matter,
making it to
the final 20 or 25 matters, and there are 27 left, and you're two away from getting in there, and you've got plenty of chips to be, you could leave and get blinded off, and you would qualify for whatever it is that you're going to satellite into. At that point, doesn't matter how you play poker. You don't have to win it. You don't need more chips. But if you're in the main event of the World Series of Poker, you need chips. You want to get to that.
You need to look at your cards. No, in a mega situation, there you're 100% right.
Yeah.
I would just leave the table if that was the case. I'm just too crazy. Like, I'm not going to sit there and them deal me cards and me not look and fold them. That's just not me.
I'm too crazy
to do that.
But I was actually at Caesars at their circuit event, the satellite into their main event, when there were, and I'm very close to this, I think they were rewarding 17 seats and they had 18 people left. And I am not exaggerating, the two chip leaders got all in pre-flop.
Oh!
When there were guys with, you know, three and four big blinds left that are trying to find a way to get into it, the one guy says, I can't lay it down. The heck you can't. One guy had kings, one guy had aces.
I would fold aces pre-flop there.
Absolutely. Why do you want to play?
Right.
There's no reason. I'm guaranteed the seat. I do not need any more chips. I am 1,000% guaranteed the seat. I'd fold aces pre-flop.
Absolutely.
There's no reason to play.
Yeah. I tried to figure out which one was the worst, the one with the kings or the one that had the aces, because they both played idiots.
They tie.
Yeah, they tie for worst.
Yeah, horrible. They're both idiots.
This is the final table poker show with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. We're live from Harris in St. Louis with John Reisner, who is one of this year's November 9. Have you started thinking about strategy for November yet? I mean, we haven't even made it out of July yet, but are you already thinking about it? And you did play against the other eight guys for a long, long time, so you kind of got to know their style a little bit. Are you already making plans, or is it not even on your plate yet?
Obviously I'm always thinking poker, but as about the players and situations, I haven't really thought about that one bit at all, just because I have so much going on with other stuff like sponsorships and
yep.
just everything else that's not poker related
to give
is
you,
going on. That to, anything you can imagine I've been asked and have done in the last yep. 2 to 3 weeks.
Actually, I can imagine it very well.
you know exactly what I'm talking about. But that time will come once they start airing it on ESPN and I'm sitting on the couch with my feet up and mm-hmm. relaxing, and that, then all that starts to settle in, those kind of things.
A couple of quick things. First of all, when we get this done, I'll give you my cell phone. If there's
okay.
something I can do to help you out or just answer it or whatever, I'd be more than happy to do that. I did that with a number of the guys that made the final table last year. I'll do it just because I've been there, and if I can help you out in some way, great. If not, you know, whatever.
That'll be
And he only wants he only wants 50%.
Yeah, right. Give me a break.
No, that'd be awesome. Like, I was told by a couple people that I should try to contact somebody from last year or the year before.
Yeah.
Just so, I mean, not for each strategy or anything like
no.
that, because, you know, we all have our own games, but just questions like something might come up, or just because they've been there before, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I appreciate that. That'd be great.
I did it last year for, Jeffrey Pollock asked me to go and address the November 9. I went up there on the stage and addressed them down at the Penn and Teller Theater and gave my name out, and six of the nine people were in touch with me for most of that 3 or 4 months, just having questions every now and then. And
yeah, that's fantastic of you.
It's no big deal at all. I'm more than happy to do it because, let me tell you, you're going to have some turmoil, and you need right now, the first words of wisdom I'll give you is, all this outside stuff that's being thrown at you that has to be handled, get it done in the next 30 to 60 days. You don't want to be screwing
exactly
around
doing
with that stuff.
And I have some great people surrounding me.
Sweet.
Taking
I love
care
that.
Of and helping me out with all this stuff. Like, it's been phenomenal. The people I've had helping do this that have been waiting
it.
For, they've been following me for the last 3-4 years on tour, just hoping, you know, just pushing for me, rooting for me, just hoping that we'd come up with something big like this, and now we got there, and now
Sweet.
They're all over it for me.
All right, well.
It's great. I have great support.
And again, I do charge a cup of coffee.
But
other
you
than
got
that.
It. I can do a little more than that.
I'm not worried about anything more than that. But if I can't help you in any way, I am more than happy to do that, because I'm telling you, you're going to have some things thrown at you, and you're just going to shake your head and wonder, where the hell did that come from?
Now, speaking of help, John, are you looking at a coach?
No, I'm not. I've always been self-taught, brought up playing online when, you know, when I'm younger and everything, before I started traveling, and I just boomed right into the circuit and had success right away. I'm not really worried about any of that. Like, what got me this far is my unique moves and strategies and all that stuff. So I'm not worried about anything like that.
Okay. Well, everybody
I've had several offers thrown my way by numerous different people, and just polite about it. It's just not me.
And that's fine. And I would say the second word of wisdom if I give you is, don't hurry into anything. If you do decide,
correct.
For lack of a better idea, that you want or could use a coach, you don't need to do that for the next 30, 60 days anyhow. Get all this other
right.
stuff out of the way. Get everything lined up. You know, you've got
tons
of time.
That's more towards crunch time when it gets closer.
Yeah, exactly.
John, I mentioned in our interview that you're 24 years old. You've been playing professional poker for several years. There are six of you under the age of 25. And the grinder, you know, he's an old guy. He's 29.
Okay, be quiet.
And Soy Wynn is 37. And the guy from Italy is 26. So, you know, we've got a predominantly younger table than we've seen in the last couple of years. How do you explain that?
It's funny you mention that, because they did a big thing on the November 9 in USA Today. And I was I just actually read that a little bit before and before we got on here, and it said our name and our age and everything, and I was looking at it, I was like, damn, I was like, a lot of us are really young. I mean, that's what I think poker's came to, is a younger crowd. I feel like a lot of success is from younger kids these days because of the online and stuff, and I mean, that's just how I feel. A lot of young kids play.
If
everyone everyone plays these days, and I think it's way more of a younger type sport now than older.
Oh, it absolutely is. If you walk the halls of the Rio down there, literally, I don't know what the medium age is, but it's got to be in the 20s somewhere because they're just row after row after row. And the problem with me is they're damn good players, too.
Yeah.
They're 24, 25 years old and very good players.
You know, who would you be more feared of having at the table? You know, younger crowd or older crowd, internet kids or not internet guys? And I always prefer not the internet young kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they have a very unique mind and ways of playing, and they're crazy. They're fearless.
He wants middle-aged bald guys like us.
They're playing 10 tournaments a day online at the same time. They're trying these moves where they don't care if they get knocked out because they have the other 9 tournaments that they still go deep in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I'm trying to see where poker's going to go. I've been fighting for some of the legalization of it. I've been to Washington. I've been doing some of these other things. But if you look at the huge number of 20-something or others that are playing it now, it's just going to continue. Every year is going to add another crop of people turning 21 that are going to be out here and doing it.
Well, I know where poker's going right now. It's going to John's home state of Florida. John is from Port Richey, Florida, and since the law changed there just a few weeks ago, I'm guessing there's been an influx of professional poker players coming to your state to exploit the new non-limit rules. Are you one of those?
Of course, yeah. I live a couple minutes right away from the Tampa Hard Rock. They're thinking that the bigger games are going to be down in Hollywood, Miami.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, because there's more money down there and maybe some bigger players, blah blah blah. But I've had numerous people contact me, poker guys, and right when the law changed, you know, we had still like a month left in the series. So like, if I was sat at a table, you know, the kids would be like, "Oh yeah, you're from Tampa, right, John?" And I'd be like, "Yeah." "Oh, take my number. If I come down there, I'm going to contact you, blah, blah, blah." So I haven't been since I've been back just because of doing a lot of stuff. But
yeah.
I plan on checking out sometime soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's what I've been waiting for since I turned 21 here.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. I mean, of course, I've went there in the past. I mainly just played the Sit and Goes because that was the only real poker, you know, the single table tournaments, you know, the $500 buy-ins or $1,000 buy-ins. You know, that was the only somewhat deep stack no-limit poker to play.
Okay.
So, and that brings another thing up. That's why I feel confident about the small table, because that's what made me who I am, is single table tournaments, and that's what this has turned into.
Yep.
You're playing to your strength now. That's excellent.
You're playing the most expensive sit and go in the world right now.
Yeah.
$9 million first prize.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Well, I'll tell you what, I was dead serious about that. When we get done, I've got your contact number. I'm going to send you all my contact information. We'll probably run into each other in a couple of other tournaments. I don't know if you're planning to go over to Europe or
plan on going to Europe. I'm figuring out that kind of my schedule right now. Actually, when I got this interview,
okay.
I'm going to do some kind of shows like that. I was thinking about going to Cyprus as well.
Okay.
In Greece. So because one of my good buddies lives out there, so he really wants me to come.
Okay. Well, I bet that's Tommy Vitas.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we could we could always meet up at these places. You know, talk about some things, cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
Here and there.
Well, John, we really appreciate your time today. We wish you the best of luck. Since you were the first guy from the November 9 to join us, we're rooting for you. Right up until the next guy comes on. But we'll have
Sounds
you back
good.
Sometime in the fall. You know, win or lose in November, you're a great guest, and we'd love to talk to you some more. Thanks so much.
All right, awesome. Thank you guys so much.
John Raisner, who's fourth
Take
in
care,
chips
John.
In the November 9, going to the final table of the main event of the World Series of Poker. With Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. We're live at Harris for the final table, brought to you in part by PokerStars.net.
Okay, can you believe this? They now have a new promotion on PokerStars. They always come up with something different. You can now go on there and play for free and qualify for a Lamborghini.
What?
A Lamborghini.
Wow. Not enough that they have events all over the world that you can get buy-ins to and travel and play everywhere.
This is just, it blows my mind, the different things they come up with. You can go on there and qualify for a Porsche. You can go in there and do for these other things. But this Lamborghini promotion is just blowing my mind. The idea that somebody's going to win that.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be somebody that starts out, go to PokerStars.net, sign up, start playing, work your way through it, and somebody's going to get the keys to that car. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Go to PokerStars.net, download the software, and find the Poker Star in you. This is 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Tonight at 7 o'clock Central Time, ESPN is going to begin their coverage of the 2010 World Series of Poker. We, of course, were there giving you our coverage week by week here on The Final Table. But until you see it on TV, for a lot of people, it's not a tournament. Tonight, they'll start off with a 50K Players Championship event. It'll be Lon McCarron and our next guest, Norman Chad. Here's a conversation we recorded with Norman during the World Series of Poker when I was walking around on the floor and bumped into him and convinced him to come up to the Dennis Phillips suite.
Yeah, they're all out there. I mean, you know, this event attracts everybody from everywhere, and every third person's got a story to tell.
And what kind of stories are you personally looking for?
You know, you look for the unusual, somebody with something unusual in their background. It's usually a story that has nothing to do with poker. So it's good if they're in for the long weekend from Mars. We even take convicted felons. But anyone who just has an unusual route to get here or something unusual in their background.
Are you looking for stories that you then pass on to the production crew and they will then develop that storyline?
Yeah, we found that out by accident the first year or two that if I wander the floor, people will come up to me, you know, not because I'm pleasant or good looking, but they recognize me and they will tell me sometimes their stories, and they're hard to find. You know, it's a mass of humanity out there, and it's hard to go up to each person, but sometimes people will come up to me or Lon McCarron and tell us a story, and then we, you know, if it's good enough, we pass it on to the producers.
The one thing I was wondering about, you always, well, the frequent joke is you're looking for your next ex-wife and such, but the guys that come here dressed in the headbands or as a female impersonator or anything like that, do you actually seek those out to try and get the extra stories, or are they just wasting their time with some of these wild outfits they have?
Those generally are wasting their time. I mean, early on, I think from a TV standpoint, it looked good visually to show the guys in the headdresses or someone standing on the table pounding their chests, but we don't encourage that. And we actually show less of that than ever before. And so that's not the way to get on the television. And those aren't the stories we're looking for.
So would somebody tell Phil that, please?
But see, he is genetically predisposed, I believe, to do that. You can't take that out of the poker brat. That's just what he's going to do.
What do you think of that in terms of how it helps or hurts poker?
You know, I think it actually does both, depending on your perspective. But, you know, if it was just a bunch of people sitting around playing cards, I don't know how interesting it would be. So if you have personalities and you have people with interesting stories, that makes it more interesting. And as far as the table talk goes and the table presence, what Phil does is part him, and no question, it's part theater. He knows consciously what he's doing. But I was around him before the TV cameras were around, and he was always angry at other people if they gave him a tough beat. He's always a bad loser. So now he just plays it up a little more because it's now in front of the cameras.
Yeah, you talk about the table talk. One of the things I notice as I walk around at the beginning of all of the day ones is here are people, many of whom are playing the main event for the first time in their lives. It's the biggest poker event they've ever been a part of. No one looks happy.
I can't tell you, Paul, how often I walk up to a table, and it doesn't help that most of them are dressed in black, because I always go on, who died here? But I said, you know, this should be the greatest day of your gaming life. Yeah. Why aren't you having a better time? And it's more like a morgue, and yeah. That I don't understand. But there's always a little tension, I think, at the first hour or two of any tournament, particularly the main event. People are a little ill at ease. They don't want to make a mistake. But they should be having a better time, and eventually I hope they do have a great time.
Dennis, does that change when you come to a table?
In fact, it even did on day one this year. Came to a table, and absolutely no table talk going on, nothing like that at all. They'd moved me into it. I sat down, and I just started wondering, like you said, what's a funeral? What's going on? And we started talking. Within 20 minutes, the whole table was. I found out the background of them, which casinos they played at, what country they were from, how they got in there. They were asking me questions about the travels and what's been different. And yeah, it got to be fun and interesting, and that's what half this is. You come there to play poker, granted, and some people even try to make money at it. I'm not sure who those people are. But you come there for the enjoyment, to make new friends, the camaraderie. It's great. I love poker.
Yeah, I think there's always, again, the first few minutes, even when someone like Dennis sits down, there's just a little – people are just a little shy. And as soon as the ice is broken and someone like Dennis will start to talk to people and the ice will be broken, then people will get more comfortable and it'll be almost like sitting around the kitchen table playing with your friends.
Do you think for some of them also it's, I don't want to give anything away? I have to be stoic here.
You know, I hope they're not thinking that seriously. they're going to give away stuff later on when they play a hand badly. But as far as trying to give no poker tells away, I hope they're not thinking that seriously.
Yeah. Actually, I was at a table with Daniel, and Daniel was trying to engage a guy in conversation. He was just asking the guy, what's your name? What country are you from? What do you do? The guy wouldn't say a word and just sit there frozen. He was absolutely petrified that the moment he looked at Daniel, Daniel would be able to read him, I think.
Uh-huh. Actually, he's probably right about that. Daniel does use, you know, Daniel says openly he uses that type of talk to try to get a read on the other person. So that guy was probably pretty good to be like a tortoise.
You're a poker player yourself. What happens when you're at the table?
It's actually similar to what Dennis described. You know, I don't play that many tournaments, but anytime I'm even when I'm playing in a cash game, when I first sit down, people just are a little shy. And then the first time that I, you know, just make a comment about, you know, somebody's shirt, somebody's hair, somebody's anything, then the place just livens up, and then we have a good time. And I tell them we're there to have a good time. It's poker is a social thing first and foremost.
Are you trash talking people, Norman?
I don't trash talk people, but I've always enjoyed. You know, I actually whatever I say from a broadcast standpoint for ESPN. You know, is not half as good as whatever I say at a poker table. I much more enjoy the congenial, collegial type of atmosphere at a poker table. And I'm pretty talkative. Outside of a poker table, I'm not a people person. I don't get out a lot. I sleep in. You know, people think I walk around angry all day long. But I don't engage in people that often. But at a poker table, it's like a different – it's a whole different world to me, and it's a different me.
Yeah.
Well, I got a question. The storylines that you come up with, the comments you make, most of the time they sound really off the cuff and that. Do you come up with a good line and try and find some place to put it, or I can't do that. Are you able to come up with these lines as you watch the play interacting and unfolding there?
It's a combination, but usually before we do the broadcast, I have a tape of the 1 hour that we're going to do, and I will watch it at least once. And when I'm sitting there watching it, I talk like we're going to talk. I'm going to be with Lon. I react to things spontaneously, and then I'll write down a couple things if I like it. So that when I'm at a poker table, again, I am actually more natural at the poker table making those comments than I am in the broadcast booth. So it comes naturally, and then because we have the opportunity to see it first, you can hone some of the stuff a little better to timing-wise. But yeah, most of the stuff is just off the top of my head, and then I just write it down.
Wow, I couldn't do that. It would come off very bad if I was trying to do it off the cuff, let me tell you.
I want to go back to the storylines for a second, because you walk around, you find somebody, or they come up to you, and then you and the production crew get together. Oh, this guy's got a great story. We got to get it. And maybe you take him aside after day one, and you do some stuff with him. I don't know how the production of it works. And then they bust out on day two. And now your storyline doesn't have any – it doesn't have an ending, happy or otherwise.
If it doesn't have an ending, by the way, and they bust out that quickly, Paul, then we can't use it. I mean, sometimes we feel like the Grim Reaper. And you get emotionally attached to the people that you talk to. And then sometimes you go into a cycle where, you know, you've talked to five or six people and some of them have good storylines. And every time you talk to one, they're busted out two levels later. And you feel guilty. You don't even want to talk to them anymore. But, yeah, the stories, you know – figuratively die on the poker room floor if they don't last long enough. Yeah. We can't build the storyline to have a beginning, a middle, and end if they bust out too early in the tournament. And so, if you bust out day one, you're not going to make it because the telecasts are almost built backwards. We have to see what the ending is, and then we find who we can find who we want to get to that ending. So if you don't get to the end, we're not going to tell your story because you just go out too quickly.
Yeah.
So you're actually rooting for people at the table sometimes on these.
That's no question. You know, it's just like anything else. You know, I'm trained as a sports writer, and you learn you're supposed to be dispassionate. You know, the old thing is no cheering in the press box. But you're human, you know. I like Bjorn Borg. I didn't like John McEnroe, so I'm going to root for Bjorn Borg. Same thing when I first with poker. I like Daniel Negreanu. I like Miami John Cernuto. I like Doyle Brunson. I don't like Mike Matisseau. I don't like Phil Hellmuth. And it's hard not to root. But yeah, we certainly root. I certainly root for the amateurs. Who and Dennis is the greatest example of I can think. And the only one that we got close to them last year was Darvin Moon, who was even a more unusual person. But a guy right off the street who's just engaging, nice. You just root for him. You root for them to make it to the final table.
Yeah. Did you play any events this year?
Every year I usually play two, either Stud 8 or Oba Hall 8. And, that's it. I never cash. Cashed one time. Now one for 15. So
back in 2006 or something.
No, last year I cashed for the first time.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So, one for 15. Well, I keep making it to day two. Actually, my Indian name would be Day Two and Done. So, maybe I'll change it legally.
So you've been around the World Series for a long time, not just doing the telecast, but all the rest. And, of course, we've seen the growth of poker, and then it, you know, kind of slacked off a little bit for a couple of years, and now it's come back with 20% more people involved in the series than last year. What have you seen in the change in the way players are approaching it or actually playing it from both a player's perspective and the broadcaster's perspective?
Well, the sheer numbers changes everything. And so, you know, we have both an increase in terms of quantity, and then because of the best internet players, the best online players, you actually have an increase in quality at the top end. And Dennis can attest to this if he plays with them. Really good young online players who study the game, who play more hands, who look at it at new angles. You know, they are just terrific. Now, there's dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of mediocre players as well, and that fills the field as well. But we have a larger field, and at the very top end, there are just hundreds of guys who just on any given day are just going to kick your butt. So that's what we've seen, of course. The game has gotten younger, which is great, because the game was literally dying off, you know, to a degree in card rooms and casinos before the TV poker boom came along.
Absolutely. And as part of the young people who play so well storyline, are you going to be concentrating this year on Durr, who didn't win his bracelet bets, and Annette, who was here for her first time ever giving it a shot? Will that be part of the ESPN
story?
Sure.
I mean, you just mentioned the two of the biggest ones, because for Annette, it's tougher to be a phenom in poker. Just it's just the element of poker. You know, you could be playing really, really good and not even cash for 10 straight tournaments. But Annette, as far as the build-up, obviously she won her first bracelet in Europe when she was 18. The anticipation of her playing, you know, it's almost the poker equivalent of when Tiger Woods broke in, he was hyped. When LeBron James broke in and he was hyped. Even when Steven Strasburg now broke in. Annette, there's no way Annette can fulfill those expectations because of what tournament poker is like, but people want to see her play. And then you mentioned Tom Dwan, who just, you know, in the poker world resonates, but the mainstream America really doesn't understand him, so we'll just try to give a little bit of Tom Dwan.
Well, I thought that was so unfair, the pressure they put on Annette. I don't know her that well. I've met her a few times, seems like a nice gal. But, I mean, when you walk in the hallway and you see her picture right up there from the Bluff magazine, a big blow-up of it, and beware. So, you know, there are people walking down there and they're ridiculing. It's a 21-year-old. Why am I going to be aware of her? Well, she is a good player, by the way, but there's no way she could live up to this hype. There's no way she...
Impossible.
It had to be huge pressure on the back of her the first time she sat down at a table. I don't envy her at all. I would hate that.
Yeah. Tell us about your first time ever coming to the World Series of Poker and what that experience was like.
Well, even though I was always a recreational poker player, I had no experience in tournament poker. Hardly ever played in a card room or a casino. Usually played in home games. And when I came here in 2003, and it was at Binion's, and I walked into the what they called Benny's bullpen, where the tournament was. I called my closest friend back in Maryland, who I went to college with, on the cell phone. And I just had learned how to use a cell phone. That's how behind I was, you know. And I called him. I said, "Vinny, where has this been all our lives? You cannot believe the vibe here. You can't believe the buzz. You can't believe the characters." And I said, "This is, you know, the event hadn't even started yet, and I could feel that it was something special." And I fell in love with it the moment that I walked into Binion's.
Mm-hmm. But you were around poker for a long time before that, as you mentioned, in home games. And as a sports writer, you must have been around jocks playing poker all the time on the road.
Yeah, they play poker and gin. And also I played poker in D.C. It's hard to find games in D.C., Maryland, or Virginia because, there were no casinos. So I had played in these illegal underground games in Washington, D.C. I made a mistake. I was playing in a game in which I was getting beat pretty regularly. Figured out that the game was not on the up and up.
Ah.
And like an idiot, at that time I would have been under 30 years old, but I had no excuse. I kept playing in the game another 4 or 5 months because I needed the action. I mean, they're playing partners. The dealer can produce a card, an ace, anytime he wants to. I'm getting drilled for $500 every time when I'm making $500 a week, and I keep playing for another 6 months. It's no wonder my first wife left me.
That's a bit of an expensive tuition to learn how to play poker.
That's ridiculous.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Where were your friends to take you aside and say, come on?
Well, they were sitting to his left, maybe.
Let's not go Tuesday night.
They were sitting to my left. They had fun. It was incredible.
Did you play with any of the athletes that you covered when you were on the road with them?
No. Actually, I hardly ever went on the road. When I was a sports writer, I was being on the road, being in any locker room interviewing athletes, I used to say is the worst place to conduct business in America. I mean, it's a ridiculous atmosphere when Albert Pujols, you know, comes into the locker room and showers and is coming out with a towel, that you're going to say, "Hey, Albert, let me ask you this." It's ridiculous. Yeah. They should be able to get dressed, go someplace else, and then you speak to them.
Right.
So I hated going into the locker room. But when I did go into the locker room to play to interview them, you know, I noticed that, you know, there were a lot of cards around. They would play cards in the clubhouse. They play cards on the plane, obviously a lot. But I never played with any of them.
Yeah. You know, I ran into a similar situation. The poker world equivalent of that is when you're around the main event and, you know, we're looking to try to get people to come up and do the show with us here in the suite. And I've learned not to approach any famous poker player when they're walking away from the main event, because it usually means they've just busted out of the main event.
Correct.
A couple of days ago, I'm walking away from the main event to go do something else, and I see Eric Lindgren coming the other way. And I thought, well, he couldn't have busted out. He's coming this way. This is the perfect time. We've never had Eric on the show. We'd love to have him on. I go up to him, say, hey, Eric, I just busted out. I can't talk to anybody. Whoops. Well, you should be walking the same way I am. What are you coming this way for?
Yeah, that moment of bust out. And Eric's one of the nicest guys out there. I love talking with him. But, yeah, he's typical of most poker players. There's got to be a cooling down period. You just don't want to deal with anybody the moment you bust out, particularly when it's the main event.
Yeah.
But any event, you just want to be left alone.
Either that or you got to do it. When I busted out last year with that Ace-King versus Ace-King deal, literally they're escorting me out of the nice little pin area where we were playing in for interviews, and a guy runs up to me and hands me a shirt, and the shirt on the front of it says, Big Slick Sucks. Okay, then I had to start laughing. I have to admit, that was such an overkill. It was like, okay, never mind. He gave me the shirt. I took a picture with him, and away we went. But normally, you're right. That's the worst thing in the world is when you're walking out, you've just busted out, and you got a lineup of people here that want to talk to you.
Yeah.
How do you don't want it. You want to run the other direction.
For sure.
Well, that was part of our interview with Norman Shad. Let's get to a main event question. You know, we didn't get to ask John about this. I know that everybody at the final table has a patch deal. Some of them have it with PokerStars.net. Some of them have it with FullTiltPoker.net. I don't know what the numbers were. I know that the World Series of Poker had previously made a three-player limit for which online site could have three patches or how. Explain to me how that worked.
Okay, well, what it was, because of the dominance of PokerStars a couple of different years out there, the restriction they put on it was that at any feature table, the most any one site could have would be three patches on there. Doesn't mean you can't have more than that players. It's just they will not be branded at that table. So like the nine right now, the most you can have is three from any one site. But if one of those three gets knocked out and there's a fourth person who is also with that site, he can then put the patches on.
Okay.
So you can have three at one any given time.
Okay.
But they didn't want somebody coming in and, you know, the whole final table is all one site.
All PokerStars or all Full Tilt or Ultimate Bet or Doyle's Room.
And it was the dominance of PokerStars that actually brought that rule into it.
Interesting. Now, here's the other part of this, and I get asked this all the time, and you don't have to go into specific numbers about yourself or anybody else that you know, but at what point in the main event do the sites approach players and say, where our name?
Actually, there is some of it going on even before the tournament starts. Any players that's been really hot, anybody that's, you know, gotten some notoriety for some reason, been on some televised shows, whatever, they'll start to be approached by them to see if they can get them to wear it before then.
And that might be young pros who
are not
affiliated with a site yet.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Then during the beginnings of the first few days, the only people that are going to be approached will be those that are at a feature table. And they'll get what's called kind of a mini deal. You want to wear the patch for the day. If you get airtime, we'll pay you so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you
is that somebody who's sitting anywhere in the pavilion or in the Amazon room?
No. Feature tables only. Those that are being televised.
Okay,
those
but this
the
year there
ones.
Were four different feature
Correct,
tables.
There was.
So does that mean more people were getting patches and
yes,
more people
were
making money?
Yes, they were.
And can you give me an idea how much you get paid if you're going to do that?
It varies widely. It really, really does. Depending upon your chip stack, depending upon a lot of different things, depending upon how many people they already have at that feature table.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, if a site already has two or three notable people at the feature table, they're really not interested in patching anybody else up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business deal.
Yeah. But by the way, the way those feature tables are chosen are the WSOP staff and the ESPN staff look around the room at who's at which table, and when they choose to move a Vanessa Russo, a Doyle Brunson, a Daniel Negreanu, last year you were on a table where you and the Grinder were sitting side
That's
by
true.
Side. They,
yep.
they looked at that and said, let's put these guys on because we can get some good TV out of them. They move the entire table.
Well, what it is, to make it totally fair, everything is random. So the chances of you sitting with a Johnny Chan or whatever, you know, it's the same as everybody else. But then after the tables are formed, that's when they can go back and find it. And they did. There were three pros at that table, the feature table on day two that I was at.
Because
I was there with the Grinder, and I was with a pro from Brazil. that was there. The three of us then sit down, and we had a good table, and then the rest is history, as they say. Right now, though, if you're lucky enough or unlucky enough to draw a Johnny Chan, to draw a Phil Ivey, to draw somebody that's a notable name, and they move that table to it, they bring everybody else with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair to take somebody off a table and do it.
Right.
So they move the entire table.
And so people who just maybe satellited in or
correct,
won their way
correct.
In for a $20 thing on,
yep.
on PokerStars.net, they ended up there, and now all of a sudden they're not only sitting at a feature table, but possibly being paid
correct.
To sit at that table.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to get into it because there is a lot of variance in it, but a generic number that's thrown out a lot of time is, especially deeper into it, is $5,000 just to put the patch on for one day.
Mm-hmm.
Not too bad.
For some people who are playing this who are not going to cash, that's their cash.
There you go, absolutely. Now, again, though, once you've been branded, once you've been patched, you're kind of tied up with them. You've got an agreement you're signing. So it does make a difference. I know of several people that turned down the patches and turned down that check. Because they knew that if they were one of the people that ran really deep, they get a whole lot better deal later in the tournament.
Well, you did something like that with one of the sites that came to you and wanted you to wear a backwards hat.
Yes,
this
is true.
I mean, this is almost a legendary story, but tell it again.
Well, what it was, when we got down to 100 and I was among the chip leaders, and then we got down to 27 and I was the chip leader, I was approached by several different sites, and they wanted me to put on their hat and put it on backwards so it clearly shows, and sign this agreement giving away my first male child, a quart of blood, and who knows what else. And I refused to do it.
Yeah.
And I shipped it back here to my attorney, let him look it over, gave him the negotiations, and we didn't sign a deal. I think there was maybe 14 people left when I finally signed it, during which time I went a roller coaster and the whole bit.
Yeah.
So it was unreal.
I know it was very late on that night as you
very
were working
late.
Your way towards that November 9 bubble.
My attorney, who was also a personal friend of mine, about had a heart attack when I lost a huge
we all
percentage
did.
Of it.
All of us who were following you and sweating you, we were all literally sweating you at that point. But I want to go back to how they choose the feature tables for just a second. A quick story. Jeff Roper, our friend from here in St. Louis, who won the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis in April. And not only did he get the ring and the cash, but he also got a buy-in into the main event. He got in, he was assigned or chose to play on day 1C. And I had talked to him earlier that morning and told him I wanted to give him some final table gear, a sweatshirt and a hat, and he was going to wear that, and he was happy to do that. Well, you and I were doing some interviews up in the suite.
Okay.
And so I couldn't get down there before the noon start. I finally got down there. We took a break. I think it was in between Johnny Chan and Howard Lederer. I went down there, and I knew what table he was at, table 316. So I go to table 316, and I'm looking around, and table 316 is one of the corner feature tables, not one of the two main ones, but a corner feature table. And I look over, and Vanessa is at that table. I said, wow, this is great. And then I realize, I look over, I don't see Jeff. I see an empty chair here, though.
Oh.
I said, oh, no. Please, don't tell me that Jeff busted out of here in 90 minutes. He's a good player. That's not likely. Unless it was kings and aces or aces that got cracked or something like that, that's not likely. So I asked, and they said, oh, no, whoever was assigned to this table earlier, they've been moved over to 342 or something. He's like four rows down and three over there, and I found him.
Yeah.
And, of course, because they wanted Vanessa on camera, she was there the whole day and of course, did very well. And I found Jeff and talked to him, and he lasted a little bit longer than 90 minutes. Not all that much longer, but a little bit longer. Now, let's get back to our interview with Norman Chad. Actually, before we do that, one quick thing about one of our sponsors, the Poker Players Alliance, who fight for poker players like you and me, with members like you joining up at theppa.org. What's the latest on the Barney Frank Internet Gambling Bill, which was supposed to be marked up today?
It's been postponed till tomorrow morning, but you got to realize what this is. For him to bring it forward, for him to ask to get it marked up and get actually pushed forward, I have to believe in my own mind that he thinks he has the votes to get this thing passed. And I'm just dancing a jig when I heard that. When they've got it scheduled and now they're going to go ahead and mark it up. This is very positive news. This is going to be now brought in front of everybody. It's going to be openly discussed, and hopefully it's going to be passed.
I hope so, too. I watched Annie Duke at the hearing last Wednesday. I thought she acquitted herself very, very nicely, a very good representative. She's very, very smart and a great spokesperson for the game, and I thought she did a good job there. However, watching it, all I can think was, there are some real SOBs on this committee. guys whose minds you are never going to change. But if they're in the minority and we can get the majority, then that's a good thing.
This is such a revenue stream for the government, and they need it so badly right now. And there is so many arguments you can make, whether you do Barney's pure libertarian type one, all the way up to just the fact that, you know, it's fun, and it's a game, and it's a game of skill.
Yep.
So, and everything in between there. Let's just bring it. Let's just put it forward. Let's let the people play poker.
You can follow this bill by going to the website for the Poker Players Alliance, theppa.org, and why not become a member if you haven't yet. Now, more with Norman Chad, the commentator for ESPN's telecasts of the main event of the World Series of Poker and the 50K Players Championship, which is on tonight, and the Tournament of Champions, which is on next week. I asked Norman who is a go-to interview for him in the world of poker.
Oh, there's a lot of them. I mean, there's some people. We used to, when I dealt in sports, we used to say, you don't even ask Joe Theismann a question. You just stick the microphone in front of him, and he'll give you 17 minutes. The amazing thing about him, you could ask him the same question. Five different people could ask him the same question in a row, and he would give five different 17-minute answers. So everyone got something that nobody else had.
Right.
So you don't know what's true.
Yeah.
But in poker, and most of them, again, and I've always preferred poker players to most athletes. Athletes grow up a little pampered. Everything is special for them. You know, just because they can run fast or make a jump shot or catch a pass. And so they have a sense of entitlement. And the least the athletes who have the least sense of entitlement traditionally among team athletes are hockey players. They're always the just happy to make it. You know, they usually don't go to college. They come out of the sticks, out of minor league hockey. They're the easiest to deal with opposed to baseball, basketball, and football players. Poker players tend to be that way. I mean, because you're not going to get pampered as a teenager. You're not getting coverage from the local papers because you're winning at poker. So they're a good group to deal with. And again, people, Helmuth, again, will talk forever. Daniel Negreanu is always very thoughtful. Jennifer Harmon's always very thoughtful. This just the list goes on and on of people who, you know, Scotty Wynn, if you can deal with a baby as every third word, is incredible, enjoyably to listen to for a long period of time. You know, so most of them are terrific to talk to.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a couple of good ones up here. We had Mike Sexton up here. We talked to him for 20 minutes, and then we should have kept the recording on. For the next hour, we talked, and then we realized we weren't recording it. This is so horrible.
Yeah, Mike said, well, yeah, he said, I got to go. And so we finished and we stopped recording, and then he sat in that chair for an
hour
and told great stories.
He's one of the best, you know, oral history guys for poker because he bridges the different eras. He's got a great mind. People love him, as they should, because he's such a nice man. So, how stupid could you be to turn off the guy?
He said he had to go.
We did that.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, now, they had the Hall of Fame voting last year, and obviously there were some questions about it, but some great people got in there with Mike. It's coming up in the nominations again. Who do you see that maybe isn't in the Hall of Fame that should be now?
You know, actually, as Mike pointed out last year, there were at least of the finalists, at least five or six of them that if they're not in the Hall of Fame last year or this year, they're eventually going to be in there. You know, Eric Seidel is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
To give a great example of that. You know, Barry Greenstein is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely.
Eventually. You know, people like Scotty Wynn, when they get older, Daniel Negreanu.
Yes.
Phil Ivey. It was preposterous to me. It's like putting Steven Strasburg in the Hall of Fame after six games, that Tom Dwan would have been on the short list. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Right.
You have absolutely. To have, I hate to use the term body of work, but if you just became legal to play poker, you know, 15 minutes ago, how you go into anybody's Hall of Fame unless 7-Eleven is giving you a super big gulp because you've been going to 7-Eleven for 10 years. So Tom should never have been on that list.
It's like giving Miley Cyrus a Life Achievement Award.
Pretty
don't you have to actually have a life first?
That's a great example. So, I don't know if they need to put an age thing. I don't think you want to do a bracelet thing because there's cash players, there's online players, there's tournament players. But you can't be getting into the Hall of Fame, for instance, in your 20s. That's just a given.
Virtually
anybody up at the top of the list in terms of World Series bracelets is going to make it eventually. And then I hope that they recognize the other part of poker, which is cash games and online games. But that'll evolve as the years go by.
But, well, some of the people do some things in the background that are great for poker. Howard Lederer does tremendous work with charities and everything. He's campaigned tirelessly in Washington and such to try and get the online. He's been developing the game. He was one of the first guys out with all the videos and that for training all of them. He does so many things beyond the felt that should be recognized.
Yeah, right. Actually, and the criteria does take that into account because it's either, you know, long time, you know, winning, you know, long time poker playing, but there's also the other categories about the good of the game and the development of the game, and that will allow, you know, Howard, who might not get in on his poker alone, you know, a couple of bracelets, doesn't play cash anymore. But what you just mentioned, Dennis, is a great point. He's somebody who should be in the Hall of Fame eventually.
I think so. He's been very influential behind the scenes a lot of times, but very influential in poker and bringing it forward.
Norman, tell us what you have planned for ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker. We know it starts at the end of July, and then we'll go, obviously, through the November 9. How many hours of main event, and what other events are we going to see?
Yeah, the bad news for me always is that for various reasons, we don't show that many bracelet events anymore. The good news is that we show so many hours, still more hours than ever before, most of it to the main event, which people prefer to see. They like to watch the just how it unfolds. It gets a higher viewership. So we will show the $50,000 Pro Players Championship, which is the new version of the old Horse Championship, World Championship for the Chip Reese Trophy. We will then show the Tournament of Champions, which was essentially an all-star game voted in by the fans of the 27 favorite players. Mm-hmm. And then we will start showing the main event in mid-August, and that will run all the way down to the November 9, 32 hours of the main event, including the final table. So it's a lot. It's 2 hours a week for 16 weeks. It's 4 months of building that event to its conclusion.
What would you like to see that you don't show?
Well, I they don't even let me into meetings at ESPN anymore because they're tired of me making this point and they think I'm out of my mind. So at least I can say it here. I believe that it would be helpful for the growth of poker if people played stuff other than no limit hold'em. I walk into small card rooms and that's all you can play.
Yeah.
And when we grew up, we played everything but no limit hold'em. So I'm a big advocate of showing Pot Limit Omaha. I'm a big advocate of showing stud. I'm a big advocate of showing the other games, not in huge quantities, but just exposing people to them, and I think people will enjoy the game. So I wish we showed other bracelet events in general. There's a lot of other events. Everyone wants to win a bracelet. They're great to watch, and also the bracelet events allow new people to show new people, new personalities that wouldn't get on otherwise. Mm-hmm. We show more amateurs.
That is Norman Chad, the commentator for ESPN's coverage of the World Series of Poker, which, as we mentioned, starts tonight at 7 o'clock Central Time with the 50K Players Championship. We know who wins that. one of the guys who gets to the main event final table this year, who I think has to be probably our vote for Player of the Year, whether he wins it or not.
Absolutely, and I'll probably be contacting him. I think we'll get him on the show here in the next few weeks.
That'll be great. Next week on the show, by the way, if you want to hear the entire Norman Chad interview, which went on much longer than what we could air here, you can catch up with the podcast, which is on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And by the way, while you're there, in addition to listening to the podcast, click on the button that says Shop and buy one of our Final Table shirts like the one Dennis is wearing today, or the hat like the one I'm wearing today, or one of the sweatshirts that you'll need when you go into one of these freezing cold poker rooms anywhere in America. That's at thechipleader.com. Next week on the show, one of the most popular bracelet winners of the year, Gavin Smith.
Yes.
A guy with a lot of fans and a lot of friends in the poker community. We sat down with him not long after he won that bracelet. We'll play that interview for you next week, and we'll have lots more ahead in the next couple. Thanks for joining us for the Final Table every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.